suggesting that we start our short meeting. I want to welcome our guests. I'm not sure from where, but you're welcome to committee's meeting. Our agenda today really would be an input from the researcher to empower us in our interaction with stakeholders next week and with the department the week thereafter in the run-up to the budget. And then we had adoption of two sets of minutes and a report. Those are our agenda items for today. However, we have Ms. Mdaka that is off sick, doctor's note. Ms. Ngwenya has gone for some medical tests or something to that effect. And then two other members, Mr. Avram and Ms. Paliso, I'm informed, are engaged in another meeting, so we're one short of a quorum. We're one short of a quorum. And Cindy was suggesting we go and look for a warm body, and I was saying, well, let me put it to the committee. I don't know that it's a chain smash if we did it next week, but if members felt that we have to do it today, then it means you have to find one more warm body. So I didn't take directions from yourself. Happiness? Fine. So the minutes will be moved to next week when we are going to meet the stakeholders as well as a briefing on the Money Act. So we will do minutes, we'll slot the minutes into that program. It shouldn't be too long. The second item that I want to put on the table is a matter that was discussed last week and as we were discussing it, there was correspondence that was making its way to my office, which has now subsequently arrived at my office, that I think has an implication on two items. The first one, you'd recall that we had taken a decision to visit Durban Westville. It was turned down for last week, and they then gave us approval for tomorrow. However, the correspondence that I, not for Friday, I beg your pardon. However, the correspondence that I received from the minister this morning indicates that you set up a multi-party task team of intelligence, SAPs, and somebody else, external task team to do an investigation, and the recommendation request was that, and that report is going to be given to her on Friday. The request was that we await that report before we go into our own work on Friday. That was the request, and that is what I'm putting to the committee for your consideration. The second item that I'm putting before you for consideration was that the agenda that we adopted last week had an item, Minister's briefing on the outcome of the National Commissioner's disciplinary hearing. As well, that one, we received a letter that matter is it's being worked on. It's not concluded as reported in the newspaper. In fact, there are challenges or counter-challenges, whatever you want to call it, on that matter. And secondly, that the department was of the view that they want to appoint a permanent National Commissioner by the 1st of April. Whether it's the same individual or a different individual was not what was there. And again, there we were requested that if they could come and do a briefing a week later, instead of the 25th after the appointment by the 1st of April. Those were the two recommendations that I wanted the committee to talk to. And we take it from there. Mr. Self and Mr. Madasa, you'll be number two. In any order, yeah. I mean, in any order in terms of what the request.
Thank you, Chair, very much indeed for giving us that feedback. Let me say about the visit to Durban Westville. I think we can await that report because, quite frankly, we're now so far after the event that that I don't think that there's much purpose in going. I mean, I think it would have made a lot more sense had we been able to go last week, but if we are only going on Friday, I think the horse would already have bolted literally and figuratively. And I think in future, what we need to do perhaps is to be a little bit more quick off the mark. And even if it's a question of not going as a whole committee, just putting together a small delegation that can go and see as soon after these events take place as possible, so that we can then report back to the committee with our findings and recommendations. Because as I said, you would have noticed that there's a whole series of correspondence now going between the Centre Commissioner and the Human Rights Commission, and some allegations that the electric fence was switched off at material points at the instructions of the South African Human Rights Commission, which they denied. So there's a whole series of things that I think we could have been on top of much quicker than we in fact were. But that's, I think, for the future, not for this particular event. The second matter...
I'll allow you to speak on the second one.
Okay.
Are there any differing views on the recommendation from Mr. Self, revisit on Friday? That's I beg your pardon.
Thank you, President. Yeah, I'd like to support a view that I do not think at this hour that it will make an impact if we visit this place. My other reason is that if the task team of the nature you have explained and is external, my assumption is that probably they will do a good job, because the problems I've read in the past about these kind of breaks was always allegations of cover-up within the department. So if there are people who are from outside who have gone there to investigate, it might be prudent actually to await their report. So I agree with Mr. Self that going there at this moment, after all these events, whatever we may have found, people, if they are guilty of anything, they must have covered their tracks by now. So I think we should abandon that visit and just deal with the reports. If there is a reason to follow up after the reports, then we can do so. Thank you.
Are we all comfortable with that approach? Thank you very much. So. Yeah, our agenda then will be adjusted accordingly for this week Friday. If you could speak to the second one, sir.
Yes, thank you. Well, just one final point about that. I do hope then that both we get a briefing from that multi-party task force and or the minister on what was discovered, and that we produce some sort of report to the National Assembly on the matter, because I do think it's a matter of public importance. But again, we can deal with that further down the track. Regarding the appointment of the National Commissioner, I would respectfully disagree with that suggestion, because if the appointment is going to be made by the 1st of April, then it would be too late to impact in any way on it if the briefing only took place after the 1st of April. In other words, I'm still completely in the dark about the process that's been followed, completely in the dark about what is happening to Mrs. Sebeka, completely in the dark about what views, if any, the minister has on this matter. And I think that it would be disrespectful to this committee for us to be presented with a fait accompli after the event. That's just my personal opinion.
Other views on this matter? Ms.
Bly? No, to me it's just a point of clarity. If, Chair, you are saying they are going to appoint a new commissioner from the 1st of April, will it be the same commissioner? Or if it's the same commissioner, then I would suggest that we can get maybe the report that we're waiting for from the minister after. But if it's not the same, it will be a problem for the committee as well.
Let me clarify my wording, because maybe my wording is wrong. And I said appoint a new commissioner. Maybe to say the position of a permanent commissioner will be finalized. That's the target date. Yes, I'm saying it was not indicated whether it would be the same or a new one or whatever. It was just that a permanent position would be finalized by the end of this financial year. The new financial year, there would be a permanent DG. That's how I understood it.
Then I think also, I don't think it will make any impact if we can wait until after the 1st of April.
So this, Mr. Fritz.
I think my colleague said that it's personal. I think it's actually our party position. So the question that concerns us, Mr. Chair, is more the issue of the rule of law, that due process was followed, it seems, and we would just like to get a briefing around those kind of issues. Why after the process and due process has been followed, why after that the commission was still suspended? I'm just thinking those are the kind of issues that we just want clarity on, and the understanding of the minister. I think that's the one that's bothering us as to why we want it sooner rather than later after the appointment. Thanks, Munya.
Happiness? All right. Then the schedule, I beg your pardon, the program had the minister join the department on the 25th of March. 25th of March, Wednesday, according to the program. Oh, okay. But yes, yeah, it's the same day that they come with the DC. Maybe it's the 24th. I see Cindy is panicking. I suppose then if that's the decision of the committee, we will indicate to the minister that on the one, we are comfortable. On the other one, the status quo will be retained. All right. Thank you very much. Then that deals with the two items that Cindy can then adjust our program accordingly. Our next agenda item is a briefing from the committee researcher, but I do know that as we speak, the department or the portfolio committee of justice is being briefed by the minister on the Child Justice Act in V475 that has a direct impact on ourselves. And there were indications from members that they would love to go there if it was possible. I don't have a problem because this is more a briefing and an empowerment. So if there are members that want to go and follow the processes around the Child Justice Act, which comes into effect on the 1st of April, I think it would be okay if one or two of us could go, as long as we don't deplete the committee. So we could take one from the ANC, one from the DA. Unfortunately, Ms. Bly, you're the only one, but I suppose.
Okay.
So can we then agree that one from the ANC and one from the DA go and represent us at that meeting, and the rest of us can get a briefing from Mpo. Mpo, 10:15, how long do you need? Half an hour for you, and then we will discuss, because really it's just about empowering us for next week's meeting. That's what it's about. Just to remind members that next week we will be talking to stakeholders around the threat plan and around their budget, how they view the budget. So this will assist us in empowering us, and then the week thereafter, we'll have an engagement with the department around the same matters, and hopefully the first week when we get back, or soon thereafter, I suppose we will have to, as a committee, sit and formulate our own position, because our budget debate, I think, is on the 21st of March or the 28th of March, so time is really tight. So that's the rationale for having Mpo brief us today. Mpo, the first yours. Are there any... We should have this document, State of the Nation Analysis. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Member, and our guests. This PowerPoint presentation, Chairperson, necessarily is a summary of the document that members supposedly got on Friday. I'm hoping that members had an opportunity to engage with the document, perhaps maybe over the weekend, and then, you know, so that they familiarize themselves with the issue. So necessarily, this is just a summary and just to spark debates around issues presented in the State of the Nation address. Necessarily, the people's chance just to look at what the impact of the State of the Nation address is, particularly on different sectors and in this case on correctional services. How does DCS operations, you know, whether are they in line with the government's plans or objectives for the year, and also looking at whether the budget would necessarily stick to some of the objectives from the State of the Nation address. Without further waste of time, Chairperson, you would be aware that the State of the Nation address, which was presented on the 11th of February, did not have specifics or anything specific or directly specific with regard to Department of Correctional Service. However, the address identified a core outcome for the criminal justice system, which is to ensure that everyone in South Africa feels safe and is safe, of which Department of Correctional Services is part and parcel of the criminal justice system. So they have a role to play in ensuring that all South Africans are safe and they feel safe. I think subsequent to that State of the Nation address, Minister Chabane obviously raised some key outputs from the State of the Nation address, which include the reduction of serious and violent crime, ensure an integrated justice system, and manage crime perception. Of course, also there were issues identified in the State of the Nation address, which are cross-cutting across a number of departments. And of course, those issues are also relevant to correctional services, which include eradication of corruption and fraud, and also the investment in youth to ensure that there's a skilled and capable workforce. On the reduction of serious and violent crime, Chairperson, we've got a table there with statistics. We'll be aware that the violent crime is defined as any criminal offense which involves the use of or even the threat of force or violence. Violent crime is also a broad legal category that encompasses a number of criminal offenses. You talk about your murder, talk about rape and other sexual offenses, robbery, aggravated assault, etc., etc. In South Africa, Chairperson, more than 36,000 young people between the ages of 18 and 25, 880 young people under the age of 18, and 1,142 women are in correctional centers for serious and violent crime, only for serious and violent crime. We have 21,318 youth between the age of 18 and 25, 481 under 18, and 1045 women. Those who are serving a prison sentence, it means those who have been sentenced already, particularly for serious and violent crime. Chairperson, in the annual report of 2008-09, Department indicated that 60,543 offenders participated in corrections programs. Also, by the department also intends to increase to 13,310 offenders. Those will be having your sentence plans, and you'll be aware that those who will be having sentence plans, according to the department, is offenders who are serving at least from 2 years upwards. And we also see, Chairperson, that would have 81,181 offenders sentenced for serious and violent crimes. So if you make a comparison between the two, you could see that the target for offenders having sentence plans is very low, particularly if you compare it with those offenders who are serving sentence for serious and violent crimes. As this is one of the objectives of government to reduce serious and violent crime. So So one would say DCIS is not doing enough, Chairperson, to win the fight against serious and violent crime. If you look at the number of offenders who will be having sentence plans by 2011, 2012. And also targets for sentence plans are low and many offenders are not participating in any corrections programs. The second item under, or one of the key outputs also, is to ensure an effective and integrated justice system. You'd remember, Mr. Self, that in 2008, in the State of the Nation address, government saw a need to transform and revamp the criminal justice system. And again in 2009, the State of the Nation address announced the establishment of a transformed, integrated, modernized, properly resourced, and well-managed criminal justice system. Of course, the Department of Correctional Services, as part of that team, there was a task team or a coordinating team established. At that time, it was led by, I just forgot the person. And DCS was given the responsibility to establish an ACD branch, awaiting trial detention branch. And according to DCS, in July 2009, they developed a concept document which was canvassed to other stakeholders within the criminal justice system for input. And DCS also indicated that they've completed a minimum facility standard for dedicated remand detention centers. Fortunately, I was able to see in one of the replies from the minister where members posed questions in terms of particularly this remand detention centers as to how many are they, how far is the process, and so on and so forth. And DCS indicated that already, I think it's 11 remand detention centers that they've identified that will deal specifically with awaiting trial detainees. And according to DCS also, they indicated that already offenders have been migrated to those centers. But of course, there were some challenges that they've indicated in that particular aspect. Another output, Chairperson, in terms of that the Minister Chabani indicated was to ensure that we manage crime perceptions. One would say research has also indicated, honorable members, that the number of people, those who experience a fear of crime, far exceed those who are actual victims of crime. So here we are dealing with perceptions of crime, you know, the fear of crime, people, whether are they afraid and all those. So you'd have research indicating that you'd have number of people who experience fear of crime, which enormously exceed those who are actual victims of crime. And of course, DCS has got a responsibility to play there. It's not only the responsibility of SAPS to deal with the perception of crime, but the correctional services have got a responsibility to play. And DCS's responsibility is to ensure safe custody of offenders, particularly by preventing escapes. Before you open, Chairperson, you spoke about our intended visit to Westville where offenders escaped. That in itself, you know, these people are dangerous. They've escaped. They are going to commit other crimes in the community. We cannot afford that. You know, that in itself, it says to ordinary people on the street that the criminal justice system is not doing enough to protect us. So DCS has got a role as well, you know, in terms of dealing with the perception of crime. You'd be aware that in 2007-08 annual report, DCS indicated that they had experienced 79 escapes. And in 2008-09, the number were reduced to 65. I mean, for a financial year to have 65 escapes, that's too much. You know, it increased the fear of crime from ordinary citizens, because people expect DCS to safely secure those who have been sent, you know, to so that these people are taken out of society.
But now, if we allow such number of escapes, we are not doing enough, or we are not doing anything. The department is not doing anything to address this objective of government, because the objective of government is to ensure that we deal with or we manage crime perceptions. So this is an unacceptable high level of escapes, makes South Africans not to be safe and not to feel safe. Victims should feel safe, should feel that they are an important stakeholder in the administration of justice. You'd be aware that a victim's charter, which is an important document which ensures that victims are or remain central within the administration of criminal justice system in South Africa. In particular, the charter provides that DCS should afford offenders, particularly within the Correctional Supervision and Parole Board, should afford offenders an opportunity to make representation during parole board hearings if an offender is applying for parole. And you'd have situations where DCS is not doing enough to ensure that victims form part of that particular process. I think somewhere last year when we attended the first summit on Correctional Supervision and Parole Board, chairpersons of parole board indicated that the number of victims who come to make presentations is very low. In other instances, they don't come at all. But obviously, it's not the fault of victims, because in certain instances, it's as a result of financial constraints, travel arrangements, and so on and so forth. I think the department should make it a point or provision for to allow or enable victims to be able to go there, because it doesn't assist if you have a provision to say that a victim should come and make presentations, but you don't assist these victims. In most cases, these people are poor, they are from disadvantaged backgrounds, so they will not be able to afford to go and attend those. They'd want to go, but they cannot afford. So this year should do something around that. Another output, Chairperson, is eradication of corruption and fraud. It's one of the indirect issues that are relevant to DCS. Of course, you'd be aware that corruption is about power and the abuse of power. I remember at one stage, Honorable Self, when I was still in student politics in SRC, we used to tell those who were in power that, comrade, power is not permanent, and therefore you should not abuse power. Corruption, obviously, it has got a devastating effect, particularly on poor people, and especially corruption in the public sector. We know that corruption, it costs government millions of rands every year. That particular money could have been used for service delivery. At the moment, we've got in different provinces, people are protesting, particularly for service delivery. And if you look, you make an assessment, corruption is central to those strikes and the service delivery protests. Corruption has been emphasized in a number of State of the Nation address. Also, Chairperson, the ANC January 8th statement indicated that corruption will be fought within and outside the state, that is, in government and also in the private sector. You'd be aware that in 2001, the then President Mbeki appointed the Jali Commission of Inquiry to investigate corruption and maladministration in the Department of Correctional Services. And among other things, the commission found that officials were involved in smuggling of food, smuggling of weapons, and drugs into prison. But of course, the department came with a number of measures to deal with those. Among them include the system of backless society, the system of cashless society. So it means both offenders and officials should not have cash with them. You'd be aware, Honorable Self, that when we went to Kimberley Prison, in their presentation, they indicated that staff, they should not have cash with them, because some of these things, they contribute significantly to corruption. you'd be aware again, Chairperson, that corruption came under the spotlight in November last year when the SIU reported to this particular portfolio committee about their findings on the large-scale procurement contract in DCS. And in the main, the SIU, Chairperson, revealed that procurement within the Department of Correctional Services is vulnerable to corruption. And also, corruption is in DCS is committed by senior managers within the department. And honourable members, you would also be aware that the January 8th statement also indicated that regardless of their positions, all those involved in corruption or in corruption will be severely dealt with, whether you are a senior manager or whether you are a junior manager, whether you are a commissioner or the minister, but you'll be dealt with accordingly if you engage yourself in corruption. Of course, the government had a number of measures to deal with corruption and fraud, both in the public and the private sector. Among them include the issue of anti-corruption strategy, of which more detailed information is contained in the document, Mr. Self. Also, the establishment of the Directorate of Priority Crime Investigation, popularly known as the Hawks. Also, the establishment of a tender compliance unit and supply chain fraud unit. One would hope that each department has got this particular unit to deal with corruption and fraud, particularly within supply chain. As the SIU indicated that this particular section, supply chain and procurement, is vulnerable to corruption. I don't think it's only in DCS, but in many government departments and in private sector. Also, there was an establishment of the ministerial task team, which was tasked with the responsibility of developing measures to root out corruption at all levels of the state. Among other indirect issues relevant to DCS, Honorable Bly, include investment in youth to ensure a skilled and a capable workforce. DCS has got a responsibility to incarcerate young people as well. And according to the White Paper on Corrections 2005, those who are between the ages of 18 and 25, it's a category of young people, of offenders that is growing rapidly in our correctional centers. You'd see that at the end of December 2009, 56,000, almost 57,000 young people, only between the age of 18 and 25, were incarcerated in correctional centers. Of those, 24,070 were awaiting trial, and 32,870 were sentenced for various crimes. You'd be aware that even after serving a lengthy sentence, these young people, they still have a chance when they are released, you know, to make something good about their life. So they still have that particular potential because they are still young, they still have got energy. So we need to invest more resources into these young people. Remember in our visit to Kimberley, and particularly also in Mangaung, the committee emphasized that we need to invest these resources to young people. It's of no use to invest these resources to a 55-year-old man who would be saving 20 years. He's not going to use that investment. So I think the department needs to, you know, look into their priorities, you know, especially with this limited available resources. They need to invest this limited available resources where they will benefit most, not only for DCS, but for the country as a whole. Obviously, successful rehabilitation of youth depends on DCS ability to provide education and training in various trades. In this particular instance, the program development is relevant to address these skills, to impart skills to young offenders in correctional institutions. Chairperson, in 2009-10, that is the previous financial year, only 448 million was allocated to development programs. It will be interesting, Honorable Self, to see what the current budget, particularly on development, says, whether is it in line, whether it intends to address this particular objective of government. Because it does not make sense to say that you want to invest in youth to give them skills and so on and so forth. But the money that you put there, it's very much little. You invest money into something else, in security. But we'll see when we deal with the budget how these funds are allocated. Obviously, there are a number of challenges that DCS is facing, particularly to for this particular program, yeah, development. Among them, they include issues of artisans. In most cases, when you go for this oversight, we are told that they don't have enough artisans, they don't have enough educators. Most of the educators have gone to the Department of Education, necessarily because of the issue of finance. Maybe the salary is not enough to attract these scarce skills. But I believe if the department is serious and they need to put more focus and invest more energy in implementing the OSD, Honorable Self, so that they'll be able to attract and retain these scarce skills for offenders. Implications for Parliament. Obviously, Parliament should monitor budget allocation to ensure that it is in line with these important objectives of government, as I've outlined earlier on. And secondly, Parliament should encourage the department to use resources effectively and efficiently. This includes using new facilities to provide better services to young offenders. As I've alluded to earlier on, that it's of no use to invest this scarce resources, because we don't have so many facilities, especially those that we've seen in the previous month. We need to invest them in these young people and with in women especially, Chairperson. Parliament should also monitor the department's implementation, of course, of the recommendation from the Special Investigating Unit. And this they can do through regular feedback from the department to see as to how far is the department in terms of implementing some of these recommendations emanating from the SIU investigation. Parliament should also raise the issue of victims' involvement in parole hearings with DCS in order to ensure that we address, as Minister Chabani indicated, that we need to manage crime perception. So victims should feel that they are an integral part of the criminal justice system. Thank you, Chairperson. Parliament should act faster, harder and smarter. Thank you.
Of course, thank you very much. We'll open up for comments from members. I think you very much spoke to what the committee has been talking about over the last couple of months. Three issues that I would want to raise or emphasize on that I think the committee would need to, if we agree, push when we see the department at least. The one that you were talking about, for instance, the skills issue. You know, we've been talking about this thing of inmate labor for so long, and I really believe the time has come for us to say it must happen. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of hullabaloo from the International Labor Organization and human rights people saying you can't use inmates and so on. But if we're saying we want to skill people, I really think that it's going to have to be a balance between those that are fighting for labor regulations or whatever they might be versus skills. So I personally would want to push the department in that direction. The second one, and you've alluded to all of them, is around the development. I agree with you. You know, we have somebody going to prison that's 20 years or 16 years with a standard 2. Comes out 20 years later, he's still got only a standard 2. No training because of the arguments you're raising, no educators. Or not. I really think we need to say to them, it's unacceptable that I could go into prison at 16 with a grade 4, come out 20 years later, I've got nothing else other than a grade 4. And we have facilities. So I agree with you on that one, and I agree that maybe we need to push the alignment of the budget to talk to youth development. The third issue that I'd want to raise is around our role in overcrowding and those type of things. And again, we've been talking, Mr. Sharp, I suppose you would have been doing it much longer than most of us. You know, there's these things about alternate sentence that there's opportunity to never use. I mean, somebody stole a loaf of bread and he goes to prison instead of going to maybe mow the lawn at the cemetery to... But he goes to a cell that is already overcrowded. The bail protocol. Below 1,500 rand, the police can give you bail if they have to. But we get people in jail for 500 rand because he stole two loaves of bread or something like that. So I really think that we would need to say to the national commissioner, whoever he or she is, that they would need to push those type of things. And then, of course, the remand centers that we've spoken about. I've just been hearing about these things. I've never seen a physical one. We need to ask the department, where are they, when are they going to come, and when are you going to start moving people from our facilities to these remand centers? So I agree with you on that one. The final one that I think we need to raise, and you've raised it also, I guess it might be a bit controversial, but it's this whole issue that Mr. Self has continuously spoken about. The PPPs. Now we can debate about the model, whether it should be. My own view is that we can't outsource it all to the private sector. I mean, looking after dangerous inmates. But the fact that we must build these five new prisons, for me, is going to go a long way into dealing with your overcrowding and so on. Now again, we have to play a balancing act, because in the past they would allocate all the budget to that because they thought that that's where most of the money is going to. So if we force them to build these facilities and also force them to do more on development and care, they might say they don't have enough funds. But I think we have to find a balance. We can't not have prisons for so many years after they've been agreed to. Money gets allocated there, but they haven't built them. So they really couldn't say to us that the money went there. They can only show us one prison after 10 years. So I really do think we need to argue about whether the model of management is something else, but the facility has to be built. So for me, those are the issues that I think you've touched on there, but I think we really need to elaborate and make sure that the strat plan talks to those things, and the budget then talks to the strat plan. Those are just my own comments, but Mr. Self, anybody else wants to comment? Mam Nyanda, you'll follow Mr. Self, and then Ms. Blythe, if there's any you want to make, then you can make it, so that at least we have a common sense of how we're going to deal with the department. Mr. Sal.
Thank you, Chair, and I echo what you said. I think Paul did a wonderful job of extracting the maximum content from a single sentence in the State of the Nation address. But anyway, I think it was a very good effort. Chair, I would agree with most of what you said. I think that the key problem that I face with this budget, which I've done some analysis on ahead of our meeting next week, is that the department still fails, in my view, to align its budget with the white paper. So it says one thing, that it's official policy. It says it's migrating to that, and it tells us each time it comes here all the problems that it faces and the challenges and the staff and the, you know, all the other things that they come here with. But when the one decisive way in which they could make that intervention, year after year, they don't do it. And it is quite correct. It is aligning, it's taking resources away from security, basically, and putting them into development. And I think that's the key challenge, and that's certainly a lot of the questions that I'm going to be asking around that. And I think you're right also that... It concerns me greatly, and this year's budget refers to the five new generation prisons and says there that the private-public partnership route is the way that it's going to be financed. But I don't know what's going on. Nobody ever says anything, and I think they need to come to the table and tell us in explicit terms what is going on there. Now, one of the things that Paul talked about in terms of the need to manage crime perceptions and make people feel safe was the escapes from prison. I think I agree with you. I mean, we must make prison labour a feature of our programme going forward. But I think we've also got to accept that along with prison labour goes the added risk of escape. And we can't have both sides of the... We can't have our cake and eat it. And I think we need to accept that if we go boldly into the area that I think we should go into, which is putting as many people to work as possible, there is going to be the risk that some people, that there's going to be slightly higher rate of escapes. And I think what we've got to do is we've got to mitigate that risk to the greatest extent possible, also in terms of the prison construction. So, for example, at Kimberley, I wasn't able to be at Kimberley, but I went there about 2 years ago, and they had this vast area that they own, which could be cultivated, but which would simply require a fence around it. And it hadn't occurred to them, just hadn't occurred to them to do that sort of, to build that into the pre-planning and therefore into the costing. Finally, just about the anti-corruption thing, and that is that the department has a lot of steps, a lot of procedures, a lot of protocols that they put in place to deal with corruption, but yet they never stop corruption. And I think really when push comes to shove, it's a question of proper management. So we might have a bag with society policy, but I know and you know that people take bags in. We might have a cashless society, prison policy, but people take money in. And it has to do with creating a certainty that if people do that, they will be found out, that they will be disciplined, that they might lose their job, and so then it no longer becomes worthwhile doing it. Mm. And until they won that war, you can have any number of steps and protocols and one thing and another. It's not going to make any difference to the root cause of the problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see here it's written that, again, in 2009, SONA announced the establishment of Transform Integrated Modernized Justice. Is our justice really transformed? I don't think so. Because these people there are these prosecutors who are there, and when this somebody goes to court, you'll find that he has stolen a loaf of bread, a piece of soap, but he'll be sent to correctional service because they will ask for 1,000 rand and he won't be able to pay that 1,000 rand. Now he must go in, be a waiting trial, to come to court and reminded. Is our justice transformed? How are we going to deal with this transformation? Because they are saying it's integrated. It's not at all. It's not integrated. You go to correctional prisoners. You get a person who's awaiting trial for 5 years. And you ask yourself why. And you don't get an answer. And that person, he will remain there until he will be sentenced again for 2 months, 2 months after 5 years waiting trial. It's a waste of resources. And when we go back to this thing of corruption, our officials are corrupt. And our officials are being suspended with pay. With pay. And that is a very big serious issue, because this person, he will be suspended for almost a year getting paid. That's taxpayers' money. And I wonder which mechanism can we use that people must be suspended without pay. I'm still wondering even now, because these people, they are doing this, they know that they will be suspended with pay. And even if it comes that they must be discharged, they go to the labor law. And the union defends them. For instance, like this commissioner, she wants to be reinstated. And she knows very well what she did is wrong. That's why we are standing with a big issue of corruption. They know where to get off. They know how to defend themselves. Corruption, officials in prison. It's them who bring drugs inside their prison. It's not these inmates. Inmates are inside. It's them. If you ask yourself, where did Matek get the 80,000? You don't get the answer until now. He's been sentenced, but the answer of where did he get the 80,000, you don't get it. It's how our officials are corrupt. Thank you, Chairperson.
Do you respond later on mobilize? Any comment you want to make?
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to also add on two issues that have been raised. The one is on the issue of prison labor vis-à-vis escape. I agree with Honorable Sir that we really need to try and strike a balance around the two, because you'd be aware in a number of meetings the issue of prison labor has been raised. And the department will tell you that they don't have enough staff to guard those people when they are working there. Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services, in their report, a number of times they've raised the issue of workshops closed, particularly on weekends. Offenders are not working. These workshops are just idling there. These people are not doing anything because of the issue of staff. And now, I remember in last year, during the public hearing on the budget, the PSA, the unions, indicated that the issue of the seven-day establishment, it stretches staff, because now you'd have more hours than before seven-day establishment. So, but now you'd have to have number of people working there for long hours, but you would have few staff members per shift. I think that's one of the issues that was raised by PSA that I remember, that per shift you'd have few staff who are guarding offenders. So, and currently, you know that there's a moratorium in terms of filling of vacant positions within the Department of Correctional Services. Up until when, we don't know. So it means for now, next year, and then so on and so forth. You know, that's what the vacancies would remain in the Department of Correctional Services. So as soon as we fill those vacancies, we're able to address some of these things. I think we really need to balance the two. But secondly, coming back to what you raised.
Just address on this question of staff. Because I think there are two types of staff. There's obviously the custodial staff, that need to take the people the workshops and make sure that they don't escape while they're there. But by and large, I mean, the visits that we did to Malmesbury, the visits we did to Drakenstein, the visits I did to Pretoria Central, in all cases, the service providers who are doing the training and doing the capacitation come from outside. They're not DCS officials. Sometimes they're contracted to the Department of Labour, sometimes they're NGOs, sometimes they're just people who do it because they feel a commitment to helping prisoners rehabilitate. So, in my view, again, it comes down to bad management. Because certainly the one time that I went to Malmesbury, they had those big five workshops at Malmesbury. One was occupied by 12 people on a Friday morning. Now, I mean, there can be no reason for that other than bad management.
I want to agree with the Honorable Self Shepherdson. On the second issue that you raised, Chairperson, around the issue of overcrowding vis-à-vis alternative sentences, you know, if you check the statistics, you'd have almost 5,000 offenders who are serving sentences of less than a year. Do we really need these people inside prisons? No, we don't need these people. These people could be diverted to other community-based sentencing options. But now the problem is the judges do not have trust in the Department of Correctional Services to be able to monitor these people. You check your annual report, they'll tell you that you'd have almost 30,000 absconders, those who are in community correction. Go
again, it comes back to the issue of management addressed by Mr. Sir. So, as soon as the judges have trust in DCS' ability to monitor these people, then judges will be able and will be more willing to impose these alternative sentences. And it comes back to the issue of the budget as well, Chairperson, to say that we need to have budget aligned to this. I think it will be interesting to look at reintegration, how much budget has been allocated to reintegration, and be able to see whether the department is it, what they are doing, is it in line with what we intend to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It really was to at least give us some to add ourselves and pull out some of the issues. We'll interrogate it further, and I'm sure we'll be further empowered when the normal public stakeholders come and give us their own perception. To yours, it's just the public hearings for next week, and we'll be able to. But I do think that as a committee, we can't accept what the department gives us if it's at a tangent to what the white paper says, or if it is a continuation of what they've been saying to us over the past 10 years. It can't be business as usual. That's what I'm saying. It can't be business as usual, and it might rub them up or the executive up the wrong side, but if it's about in-service delivery, I think we need to be insistent on these issues. So thank you very much, and Paul. We'll use this document as part of our resource document. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, we meet in committee room 3, no? Committee room 1, we meet in the same venue, where we'll be briefed by DCS. Is that still your report? Has it changed? This is an old one, I was about to say. We have public hearings next week, is it? Same venue. Is it the same venue? The same venue next week, we will then hear the public give us their own views. We have, I think, to date received 7 or 8 confirmations. The normal. It's just, I'm saying the usual, let me put it that way, not the normal, I'll be in trouble. The usual crowd, the Negroes of this world, those people, they'll give us their perspectives, and you welcome as well, so that we can hear what you guys are saying through your organized formation. As we will take what report has given us, we'll take what the public are giving us, and when we meet with the department, we'll say this is what South Africa wants. Because we have the power to either approve the budget as it is, reprioritize it, and we welcome the input from as many people as possible, so that when we do our work, at least we benefit from the wisdom of those that are on the rock face of what is happening in South Africa. So thanks for coming. Might not have been a very exciting one, but the next time you come here and we're interacting with the department, it's much more vibrant than today. This was ladies and gentlemen's talk, but it's not always ladies and gentlemen. We normally fight. Thank you very much. Thank you, Paul. Meeting is adjourned.